From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fifth day of December 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's with Stuart Peterson. As we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. And along the way, I'll update you on all the agricultural news for the day. The Farm Bill is stalled for the moment, but likely to move through Congress yet in the lame duck session. And we'll hear a bit more about how Secretary Sonny Perdue is dealing with the lack of information he's been getting about the weekend discussions between Presidents Trump and Xi. And we'll do all of that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. Good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, just a note, because I told everybody I was out on short notice yesterday, and that was just, I kind of had planned to be here. However, I had a scheduled root canal, meaning I knew it was coming and I've known for a month, so it's not been a lot of pain for me. But they kept pumping the numbing agent into me, and I wasn't sure whether I'd actually have a fat tongue yesterday or not. So that's the reason I was out. As the case happened to be, everything went really well, and gosh, here I am today, and Jackie, I don't have any pain at all at the moment, so all good. Anyway, hey, you know what? We've got a lot of ground to cover in this case. And I think I want to look forward at the moment into next week, because the December WASDE, your World Agricultural and Supply Demand Estimates, will be out. What's the trade thinking at this point? Will there be any changes in this particular report, or will WASDE stick with policies that are in place?
Well, the changes, if any, if you look at what the average guesses are very minimal. They're seeing wheat ending stocks going up a little bit, corn ending stocks going up just 2 million bushels, and bean ending stocks they're actually seeing go down about 10 million bushels. Now, those are the average guesses. The ranges go on beans from 875 to 975, compared to an average guess of 945. You know, so it's a situation. It doesn't look like it would be a big mover and shaker unless they really do step aside from some of those numbers. When you look at the world, Todd, basically pretty much no change on wheat carryouts for the world, no change on corn carryouts for the world, and just a higher bean carryout for the world than what they had last month. And so there too, and not a huge significant change. When we look at Brazil and Argentina, on the corn side of it, they're seeing a little bit less corn in Argentina, a little more beans. Brazil, they're seeing a little less corn and more beans, you know, kind of a pattern. And actually, you know, the bean guess is right now that the USDA has at 120.5 million metric tons, a little lower than what you're hearing coming out of Brazil itself, where they're guessing closer to the 122 million metric tons. So, you know, there's still room in here, and we still have plenty of time to make adjustments because we're just into their season. And so it'll be an interesting one to see and what the reaction is, especially, you know, that we've had a pretty positive move since the China announcement. Can we carry that? And can we extend on that, I guess, is what it's going to be by the time we get to next Tuesday.
Yes. Speaking of Brazil, very quickly on Commodity Week this week, somebody I know that you talk to occasionally, Dr. Cordonier, will be our guest panelist, and we'll talk with him about what those Brazil numbers, and gosh, there have been some whopper numbers. I think I saw 130 million metric tons at one point earlier in this week come out of South America as to the size of that crop, so we'll get a better idea from him of what that looks like. Stay with Brazil and Argentina for the moment before we come back here to the United States, because there are all kinds of things that are happening. They're not very far away, frankly, from being able to harvest their first soybeans. They still have freight issues there or not?
They do. The freight issues are really just continue to dog those guys down there. In fact, it's limiting forward sales, but not only at the farmer level, but at the commercial level, because the commercials don't want to commit because they don't know what they're going to have to pay. The farmer doesn't want to commit because he doesn't know what he's going to have to pay. And so it is a mess is what it is in general. When you look at their exports for 2019, they just came out with the expected number. And it looks like it's going to be 83 million metric tons, just like what they had this year. That's basically what they're going to finish out the year with is what they figure. And so it doesn't look like a lot of expansion. It'll depend, I guess, for us as to whether China expands and needs more beans than what Brazil can give them. I still say that we have China buying beans from us just in different ways. You know, you look at Argentina. Argentina is importing U.S. beans like crazy. We know that they had a tough year last year. We know that they're out. But, you know, they're crushing. And I think a great deal of those beans are headed out to China is what they are. And so you look at some of the other Asian countries, they've really stepped up their buying. And so I just think that it would be hard for us to be at this level, price level in beans, because we haven't lost as much as we thought we were going to lose, if it were not for the fact that I think they're just doing it underneath, basically. Not, you know, they just don't want to. They don't want to give in and say, "Yes, we need you guys." They're just going to do it a different way.
Yeah. So what your suggestion is that they are offloading the beans in Argentina. They're actually crushing, and Argentina's usually a bean meal export. Can we see that anywhere? Do we note where bean meal exports are coming out of Argentina and what their destinations are at all?
Boy, I've never really found it, but I haven't looked real hard. I will go and I'll look and see once, you know, because we've really improved a lot of the information we get. But information coming out of South America is really difficult. I mean, well, you just mentioned, you know, 130 million metric tons versus 122 million metric tons. The country is so large. When Jeff and I were there, we certainly could understand why it is the way it is. And we drove 35 miles and from a farm that was custom harvesting to a farm that never heard of custom harvesting, 35 miles.
Communications is difficult sometimes, very, very difficult. So
yeah, it is.
I'm wondering, as it relates to over the weekend, the discussions with China that President Trump had and President Xi had, the opportunities for the tariff. We haven't actually heard that it will come off by any means, but that the soybeans might be headed to China directly from the United States sometime in the future. I'm wondering really what you think if the tariff remains in place, even if China begins to buy beans, what that means for producers, if anything.
Well, the first thing I would say, you know, I have a lot of reasons for us to be cautious. And one is I never trust China. You know, we've seen them so many times over the years say they're going to do something and then they don't do it. So we'll see. And when you get into the nitty gritty of the whole thing, you know, they have a deal, but it isn't necessarily totally locked. And so I think, you know, you have to think about this, and you have to say, well, you know, we got great weather in South America. They're projected to have big crops. They're looking like a La Nina down there this year, which makes big crops even bigger. They're going to start to ship beans about 2+ weeks earlier than normal. So, you know, that makes our window even smaller. You know, normally we count on the fact that we're going to get some bump here because they need us because South America is out of beans. Well, you know, it doesn't look like that's going to be the case this year. They planted shorter maturity beans, which was a smart thing to do. So, you know, when you look at the fact that November 19 beans are at 6-month highs, I think you have to seriously look at hedging. I just don't think that you can bank on the fact that we're going to just go higher, 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 because we really don't know. And I think the other side of it too, you know, Todd, I talked last week about some of the things that affected price. One of the things that I left out was, you know, with the U.S. dollar being up, that's pushing crude oil prices higher in every single country that buys crude, which everybody does, making it more difficult for them to buy our products because crude is priced in U.S. dollars everywhere in the world. And so if those aren't enough reasons to be cautious, I'll tell you, to me, I look at this and say, you know, November beans, 956, This is a gift in a lot of ways at the moment because we have a lot of hope that we're going to be able to get to these levels. But, you know, hope's really not a strategy. if you, you know, you've got a bottom line, and the bottom line has to be met. And I would venture to guess that a lot of guys can make money at these levels. So, you know, what may also happen is if this tariff deal remains, okay, and we just, you know, the deal that they just knocked out here actually comes true, we might plant less bean acres, you know, than what we thought. And therefore, you know, some of the fact that we're going to plant less bean acres this next year is built into November 19 already. That could support corn, but it also could weigh on beans, you know. So, and I guess the, you know, I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but the bigger reality is we have very big carryouts, regardless if we pick up again or not. And so, you know, when you're talking about an expectation for November beans to have, or for beans to have a 945 million bushel carryout for next year, we know that that can go down, but if it even goes down 300 million, that's still 645 million. That's double of what we've usually seen at the beginning of a crop year. So I think we have to just be careful.
What's the managed money betting on it this time? Have they changed positions again or not?
Yes, they have. It's amazing. Actually, in if you look at wheat, they went from 39 short to 24 short. So, you know, so they bought back some of their shorts. On soybeans, they went from 63 short to 39 short. So there, too, they bought shorts back. Soy oil, from 80 to 69, they bought shorts back. Corn, they were 19 short last week when we talked. They're 35,000 long right now. And on soy meal, they're even. And last week, they were just four lots short. So that not a big change there. But on these others, it's just amazing how they switch back and forth. You know, for the longest time, it was short, short, long, long. And now all of a sudden, this thing is just moving like crazy. Of course, some of it has to do with the end of the year, Todd, you know, and repositioning. They'll be doing a lot of that between now and the first of the year and then right after the first of the year also.
Is it likely that the corn was mostly a repositioning, a Goldman roll, the Deutsche Bank repositioning that happens in December, or are they really starting to feel their oats? Is it, but that's kind of a funny thing of grains, but are they feeling like corn, the corn market might have some potential upside into it?
Well, I think it does. I think that, you know, as long as we can continue to go, when you look at inspections, corn's 80% ahead of last year. Still makes me a little nervous. Still makes me wonder if we're front loading. But at the very same time, you know, it's encouraging. You know, they're buying the corn. They're taking the corn. That's what we really, really need. And, you know, if wheat does end up being short around the world, which is the expectation right now, and I question whether we can sell a lot of wheat from the U.S. With the level that the dollar is at, but at the very same time, possibly. And so, you know, the minute you say something like wheat being short, you could see that definitely support corn. So I think there's some decent things here from maybe planting less, you know, less bean acres and which means more bean acres and less corn acres, which would be supportive. You know, I mean, there's just some very good things in the background.
Let's wrap up our conversation, the place where we usually begin or have for several months now, with the support and resistance levels or kind of those target areas.
Yeah, when you look at corn, not a whole lot of changes. On March, first support 368, 354.5, and then 323.5. Resistance 390, 403, and then there's a gap at 418.5 to 419.25. We know that that'll get filled someday, maybe not during this contract, but someday in the future. On May, 389 is first support, 380, and then 363. Resistance, 397, 410, and then 441. Now, beans, boy, I tell you, beans have changed since last week. First support is at $9 on January, and there's a gap there that was left behind after the other day. Next is 886 and then 826.25. Resistance 924, 961, and 998.5. And then if you look at March, again, we have a gap. 911.75 is the top of the gap. So that gives us support right at that point. Then 875, 840, and resistance at 936. 972 and 998.5, just like January.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dad. Have a great day.
You too. That's Jackie Vakes. She is with Stuart Peterson. Have you signed up for the Illinois Farm Economics Summit yet? If not, we'll be making the run around the state, we being the Illinois Agricultural Economist and myself. Those guys are upstairs here on the third floor of Mumford Hall. I'm in the basement. We'll be Monday, December the 17th in Mount Vernon at the Doubletree, on Tuesday in Springfield at the Crown Plaza, Wednesday in Peoria at the Paradise Hotel and Casino, Thursday, December the 20th at Ferranda's Banquet Center there in DeKalb, and on Friday we'll be right back here in Champaign at the iHotel and Conference Center. Our policy specialist Jonathan Kappas will be along. Todd Hubbs will be there to talk about commodity markets. Scott Irwin will discuss the long-term pricing situation and maybe a new plateau. Todd Keithy will be with us, Dale Latz, Nick Paulson, and of course Gary Schnitke. You can too, but you need to sign up today. Registration online closes December the 10th. However, you can show up at these events if you'd like. But online, December the 10th is $80. You can go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu right now. And up at the top of the page, there's a banner that switches from a couple of things, and eventually you'll see it show up with the Illinois Farm Economic Summit. Sure would love to have you there. Again, that's the week of the 17th day of December. We'll be in Mount Vernon, Springfield, Peoria, DeKalb, and Champaign all week long, Monday through Friday, each city one date. And you can find out when we'll be near you at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. In today's agricultural news, let's start with China and the potential for soybean sales there. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue was in Chicago earlier this week at the annual Illinois Farm Bureau meeting. Perdue there called for curbing America's reliance on China as a mega buyer of ag commodities. On that note, USDA has announced 7 upcoming trade missions in 2019 that Ted McKinney, Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs, will lead to developing markets like Colombia, Kenya, and Vietnam, and to a few close trading partners like Canada, Mexico, and the United Kingdom. USDA apparently has picked those countries that offer, quote, the best prospects for sales of U.S. farm and food products, says McKinney, who led several trade delegations this year, including recent trips to hunt for deals in South Africa and South Korea. But replacing Chinese demand is a pretty tall order. China bought $19.6 billion in agricultural products in 2017. That, of course, per USDA, more than any other country, with the exception of Canada. Speaking of buying, there's a whole lot of confusion still about what Mr. Trump's weekend deal with China might be and what the White House has said was actually agreed to. And that's been factored into the market as it dropped a bit this week. Purdue's comments on the deal were an example of the uncertainty that has spooked some investors. As he said Tuesday, much like he did on Monday, that USDA is still seeking clarity on what the White House said was China's pledge to start buying U.S. agricultural goods. Purdue said he wants to find out exactly what it all means and when we can go on the offense to start selling again. The secretary has also been looking beyond his foxhole. He's mentioned more than a few times of late that the trade standoff shows the need to wean U.S. agriculture off its reliance on the Chinese market. Well, let's switch topics now to the Farm Bill. Southern lawmakers won a key victory in the Farm Bill debate that has one Midwestern senator debating if he will now even vote for the bill. Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley fought unsuccessfully again in this Farm Bill to limit farm payments to one actively engaged farm manager, leading him to raise the possibility he might oppose the 2018 bill.
They aren't including it. And remember, I voted against it 2014 because how it's, they obliterated the good language I got through both the House and Senate. This is even worse.
With even nieces, nephews, and cousins of farm operators possibly entitled to farm payments, Grassley asked, where does this end?
This is how far out of control the waste of taxpayers' money has gone and the injustice that it does to the family farmers that have dirt under their fingernails and are entitled to some protection from the federal government.
Grassley says giving millions to people who are not farmers will jeopardize popular support for helping the family farmer. He says he could still vote for the 18 bill for its five-year certainty of farm policy and the anxiety farmers now have over tariffs, but not without great disappointment.
For Roberts caving in on this issue.
That's a rare shot by Grassley at Senate Ag Chair Pat Roberts for ceding to House Ag Chair and Texas Republican Mike Conaway, who successfully sought to weaken farm manager payment limits. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this fifth day of December. We're now joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks for being with us. Let's start in South America. Crops get off to a really good start there in both Argentina and Brazil, and now they're talking about something like 130 million metric tons of soybeans potentially coming out of Brazil alone. Is this crop, do you think, in as good a condition weather-wise as what we've been hearing?
Well, it certainly could end up being something like that. It strikes me as being a little high, but who am I to question that, right? I'm just a meteorologist, so let's focus on the weather part of it. From a weather perspective, everything looks pretty darn good. There will be a problem with some wet bias conditions when we're ready to start harvesting this early crop, and I think that's probably going to be the bigger challenge in front of these farmers, and that'll be true for center west through center south production areas. So a little bit of a questionable harvest season. They will get it done. They always do, and they're really good at getting the crop out even when it rains. So I think they'll get that done, but it will be a challenge. In the meantime, we do have a week's worth of drying coming up in southern Brazil, which is actually perfect because they've got a little leftover planting to do down that way, and maybe a little wheat harvesting that's still needed in Rio Grande do Sul. So this will be a good opportunity for getting that field work done. And then it looks like it rains again in another week to week and a half, and that should restore soil moisture in most areas. So everything points towards a really good crop. We'll have to wait and see if it's going to be quite as big as you suggest. I know I've heard those rumors as well. We'll see.
Interestingly enough, they're dealing with a wet problem there, and here in the United States, precipitation, now cold, has been the problem for farmers, especially in the Western Corn Belt, trying to wrap up their harvest. How are things going there?
Yeah, you know, we are going to see a warming trend, and we are going to bring back near to above normal temperatures. It's about a week away, but for the balance of this week and into the weekend, we're still going to have some cool conditions around, so drying rates will be pretty poor. And, of course, we've got a little bit more snow scattered around in some areas last night. We're going to see a little bit more again tomorrow. So it's not going to be a very good environment for getting much field work done. But next week should be a better time. I say that with a lot of caution, though, because not only will we warm up, but we're going to return a precipitation pattern to the region as well, and that's going to cause some more delay. So it should get better, but we're going to have to squeeze a lot of work in between storm systems, and it's still going to be a frustrating process, I'm afraid.
One other place that the rain is falling, though I suspect they're pretty happy about it, is Europe. Is the weather getting better there?
They are, definitely. Their drought, which lasted almost six full months, is finally breaking down. Now, that may not sound like a huge deal from our perspective, because we have droughts like that a little bit more often than they do, but for Europe to be dry for more than 2 or 3 months is pretty unprecedented, so it seems. I will point out, though, that a drought this year is not that unprecedented. We found a number of other years going back into the 1800s and early 1900s that were as dry as it was this year. In the meantime, though, it is raining there, and they are going to see a much wetter winter. And when they come to spring, they may be fighting too much moisture rather than not enough.
Okay, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.